Hello out there, and welcome to IMPACT, the official podcast of Drexel University's School of Education's Education Doctorate Program. I'm Dr. Deanna Hill, here with my podcasting partner, Dr. Stephanie Smith-Budai, and we're pleased to have Dr. Craig Smith join us today on IMPACT. Dr. Smith is a scholarly practitioner and serial entrepreneur. He's the founder and executive director of Fostering Success Boys to Men, Inc., and co-founder of Student Management K-12 LLC, an educational consulting company. He's also a seasoned educator, having taught psychology and leadership development at several colleges and universities. We're very excited to have Dr. Smith as a guest today to learn about the impact that his Drexel EdD has had on his leadership and scholarship. So, Dr. Smith, tell us about what you've been up to professionally since you graduated with your EdD in Educational Leadership and Management from Drexel.
Wow. So what have I been up to? I've been up to a plethora of things. Specifically, I actually earned my degree, and I'm looking at my degree because I finally have it on the wall. So it's literally right there to my right. But my degree was conferred back in 2016, which is when I began my work then as the director of student retention and success at Montgomery County Community College. But it was their motto, and I always embraced that experience as, or just saw motto as my sandbox to really kind of practice and fine tune the theory that I proposed during my dissertation work, which is the first year student engagement theory. And for the last 6 years, for the most part, I've really have been fine tuning that theory and creating and designing programs and initiatives with that theoretical underpinning in mind, but all the while really focusing on also developing and building my leadership skills, my leadership and management skills as well. Which is what's interesting about my doctoral journey is that I was ABD with another institution, with Argosy University, about 5 or 6 years prior to me beginning my journey with Drexel. When I compare the two programs, one program was more heavily focused on leadership style and leadership development and change management theory. And then Drexel's program was really more so, Dr. Ken Moritz, may he rest in peace, was really hyper-focused on you and understanding you and peeling back Sharmer's onion was his infamous quote. So I learned more so about myself as a leader and how I show up in said spaces. So those combined experiences, in addition to the work and the work with that dissertation, I really kind of fine-tuned that work and leveraged that work during my time at Montgomery County Community College, overseeing all of the student support programs.
Right. That is wonderful that you chose us to complete your work. And
you went complete? I had to start over.
Well, you still completed it. Right. So you had that basis that you came in with. And
yes.
You continued and you finished with us. So tell us about your journey since you've left, right? So as you're aware, the EdD in Educational Leadership and Management is designed to prepare scholarly practitioners to identify and address problems of practice in their own professional context. So what made the Drexel EdD appealing to you, and what were you looking for in a doctoral program when you decided on Drexel?
So when I began my work at Drexel, I was employed at Drexel. So part of the motivation was one, like completing the degree. At that time, I had earned about 57 credits towards the 60 required. Right. I was all the dissertation. So I was assuming they would transfer in 30 credits, 15 credits, 18 credits, 21 credits. They transferred in 3 credits. So it really put me in a position where I had to be like restart the journey. And I'm actually glad that I did, because again, when I compare the work, my work was totally different. My mindset was different. My experiences was different. I had a better sense of understanding as to who I am or what I desire to be at that particular time, which at that time, when I started, began that journey, I wanted to be a university president. I've since decided I don't want to be a university president anymore. Kind of having worked in that space. When I think about why I chose Drexel, again, part of the motivation was one, the name recognition, two, the fact that I was currently employed at the institution. So I had the tuition remission component. But three, the EdD, it was that the 3-year time frame, I had already invested 4 years into my journey of becoming Dr. Smith. I really wasn't interested in a PhD track as well. I'm not a researcher, right? So I'm a program developer, a curriculum designer, and that's kind of where my passion lies. So it ended up being Drexel, and I'm actually satisfied with the outcome of the degree. I'm satisfied with the reputation that the name carries and holds across the country. The institution that I began my journey with was a regional, it was like a local situation outside of Arizona. Not too many people knew about this particular institution, which has since closed down. So I'm so excited that I decided to come on over here and invest another 3 years into my journey of becoming a good doctor.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, talking about your dissertation, tell us a little bit about it. How did you come to the problem of practice that you selected? What did you learn about it? And then what would you say has been the most significant impact of your dissertation?
So being an African-American male who attended a predominantly white institution and subsequently, you know, worked in the admissions office and began my work in higher education, I recognized that there were a lot of gaps and holes in the Black male experience at the predominantly white institution specifically, but there were some holes in just the overall experience for first time academically disadvantaged youth who matriculate to these post-secondary institutions. The title of my dissertation ended up being Too Important to Fail, Assessing the Role of a First Year Experience Program for African-American males at a predominantly white institution. Interesting enough, I didn't attend the PWI through a special admission program. I attended the PWI as a regularly admitted student. So my experience was actually totally different. Majority of my friends had a different experience because they did attend that through a pre-scholar summer institute. At that point in time, it was the Act 101. The research that was conducted, what emerged, I already kind of expected to emerge, which was, hey, when you have these first time to college students, oftentimes than not, African-American males are registering late, right? So this is a historical trend. They register late. So that means the best teachers, right? The best classes are really not available. And now we're going to just pull together and throw you, based off your identified major or not, we're going to give you five classes. We're going to front load you with your first five classes. And again, if you're registering late, if you're late to the party, now you're not going to get the most alluring instructors, and you're definitely not going to get the most doable classes or schedule. So now you're starting, you're academically disadvantaged, you're on this predominantly white campus where that sense of belonging is going to be a struggle, right? That identification is going to be, self-identification at that institution may be a struggle. Now you have the academic challenges, right? So are we really setting the students up for failure? And that was one of the outcomes of the research and the study. My research has been cited across the board. So when anyone's looking up or focusing on or hyper-focused on student retention, student completion, first generation, first year initiatives, they've sampled my work and specifically sampled that first year and student engagement theory that I propose, which is, will we talk about that now or later? So, but the theory ended up being is an integrated theoretical framework. And the focus is in the theory of student integration, the theory of student belonging, and the theory of student involvement. And my belief is that when you're creating and developing these programs and these initiatives and these student engagement experiences, there should be an underpinning of all three of those combined, not just student involvement, student belonging, and student integration. And that's what I did to kind of inform the way that I created these experiences or designed these experiences at the college, seven of which have become college-wide initiatives at Montgomery County Community College. So when you talk about the overall impact of my research and my dissertation, I use that as the crux to design these programs, these student engagement experiences that the college has since adopted as college-wide initiatives that originally started within my own particular wheelhouse.
Excellent. And it's great to hear that people from other fields and within the fields are looking for your research, right? So it shows that it's not just an assignment or a dissertation to finish, but you're producing something that other people can leverage.
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting about that and to that point is that my chair, my first chair during that first program experience was all about just get it done. It's just the best dissertation is a done dissertation. And I always find myself repeating that to people who are in a process or in the struggle, so to speak. My chair that I was assigned at Drexel was a lifesaver. And Dr. Grant was just all about, no, you need to figure out how you can change the world and how your stuff can have value and add to the growing body of knowledge and understanding, whatever that little quote is, in the packet. But, and that's what we really focused on. And that's when I ended up adding that proposed theory, because originally it was just a mixed method research study. I went, I evaluated the program and ta-da, this is what the outcome and the findings. But I added that additional layer, which was my own proposed theory on first year student engagement. That really was the meat of my work and my subsequent work.
Wonderful. And we're glad to hear that. And I think working with a supervising professor who understands that and who can encourage you and to help you see past what's there is an incredible thing. And we're glad that you were able to experience at Drexel. And we hope all our students have that experience too. We try to make those parents in that way. So this is a longer question for you. So I'll try to ask a little bit slowly. As you know, one of the Drexel differences is our focus on sustainable leadership. And that includes understanding how systems work and coming to understand one's own worldview, values, beliefs, and habits of mind and how that influences one's own leadership. So how did this impact the way you see yourself within your own context?
Yeah, I'm totally a systems thinker, right? And the way that my brain operates. And it's interesting, again, before we went live, I spoke about my experience yesterday, you know, returning back to my undergrad institution, you know, interviewing for an opportunity, and then just kind of playing in my mind how, where the my whole notion of engage and connect. So that's something I'm big on. I preach that to my team. I ingrain that in my team. Engage and connect. Engage with students and connect students to resources. Engage with students, connect students to resources. Engage with students, connect students to other people. Engage with students, connect them to students. Engage with engage and connect. Engage and connect. And that became the foundation of our student retention work, because we're engaging with students and we're connecting students. I'm like, well, damn, where did that actually originate from? And I started thinking about when I first, my first professional position, I think I was like 23 years old, and I became the assistant director of admissions at Millersville. And I was the person responsible for recruiting the students of color that looked like me and kind of diversifying the college's portfolio. And it really was about me just engaging them and connecting them to the resources at the institution. I also thought about the whole capacity piece. The students were sold to me when they were sold on me when I went and I recruited them. They had never heard of no Millersville. It was in the middle of Amish country. So they was excited about this young black man with all of this energy. And they brought me by way, they brought Millersville by way of me. When they came on campus during the spring semester, I wasn't really recruiting as much. So I was physically on campus, and then they all just kept coming back to me. So now I'm overwhelmed because I have a job to do and I have hundreds of students, you know, looking for me all of the time. I didn't have the capacity. So that's where that whole notion of engaging and connect. Hey, I encounter a student, I engage with them, and then I will connect them to another person at the institution. I will connect them to a different department. I had this one saying, my office was on the second floor of a three-story building. And when students would come into my office, I would say, hey, have you been up to the fourth floor to see the, yeah, I've been up there. You're lying. There is no fourth floor, which let me know you haven't even gone to the third floor, which is where all the resources are. So that engagement piece, I would literally walk them upstairs and connect them and introduce them to all of the resources. So that notion of engage and connect that I'm now doing and have been able to kind of put words to it, it was actions that I was doing way back when. And yesterday's conversations was just bringing up a whole lot of stuff that I've been doing for such a long time that I just didn't have the verbiage to be able to put words to that very action that I was doing. So I've been doing the student retention and completion work for a long time. As it relates to me being a systems thinker, I recognize also just in reflection, like my professional reflections, that I do much better. I'm a fixer. I like to go in and fix systems, right? I can go in and I can look at things and see where the pieces are broken. At Mako, I ended up focusing on, I became the low-hanging fruit person. Where are we losing students? And what are some of these low-hanging fruit opportunities where we can retain 2, 3, 4 students to move our retention percentage points up, right? It ended up being one of the ones I did was like the incomplete process. Students who receive incompletes, when they don't finish it, they become turning to Fs. They turn into Fs. It affects their GPA. Their GPA is affected. It affects their financial aid. So it becomes this downward spiral. Okay, if we can get more students to complete problem statement, we have too many students that then not successfully completing their courses or completing the incomplete solution. Let's figure out why. When I looked at the whole system, there was just holes in the communication. The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. The academic advisor who spends more time with the student outside of the faculty member or the professor, they're not communicating. So there's no accountability partner there to kind of push it. So we closed that gap. We included a notification for the academic advisor when a student was notified, hey, you received the incomplete. These are what you're going to be expected to do. And then we created a nudge campaign for the academic advisor. So each month they were sending a nudge reminder to the students to, hey, don't forget to complete this. Hey, we need to do it. We need to touch base on the telephone just to ensure. And we found more students successfully completing the courses. And then that was an increase. Another low-hanging fruit that I began focusing on right before I left was students with pre-existing medical conditions, right? And those students are more likely to stop out or drop out. What are we doing or what are we doing to help successfully move these students through? Students who have lupus, I think that was the number one self-reported pre-existing medical condition. When they have a lupus flare-up, I'm not worried about finishing Dr. Smith's paper. I'm trying to get my body together, but we're on a 15-week time frame. What can we do to help ensure that these students can successfully move through the semester despite life physically happening to them or emotionally happening to them as well? So as I begin understanding who I am as a leader, who I am as an educator, who I am as a scholar practitioner, I really begin to identify my passion points, and then just areas where I'm strong. And these are some naturally gifted abilities that I can leverage and kind of do some of that meaningful work. Of course, being a Black male at a predominantly white institution, all of the Black men are going to come my way, right? And they're going to kind of direct them my way. So by hook or by crook, I ended up being the guru around all things Black male engagement at the institution. And by no means do I mind that, or did I mind that. I actually enjoy it. That's my ministry. That's what I've been called to do. But professionally, what I've become more cognizant and conscious of is making sure that that's not the only niche group of students that I work best with. So I will work well with everybody across all diverse ethnicities, sexual preferences, religions. So all students love and appreciate Dr. Smith, not just the African-American male students, but I'm comfortable enough to set the precedence like, hey, people are going to go where they're comfortable. And if all of them are coming to me because they're comfortable with me, what does that say about you and how you're showing up in said spaces? Are you engaging and connecting with students? Did you speak to 2 students today or not? Student retention is everybody's responsibility, not just the director of student retention and success. So.
That's great. That's actually a really great segue to our next question. So, you know, addressing issues of equity, inclusion, and social justice is at the core of teaching, learning, and scholarship in the EDD program. And, you know, we've continued, we just revised our keystones, Dr. Smith, to make that commitment more explicit and visible. So, you know, tell us a little bit how your experience as a Drexel EDD student or your dissertation research, how has that impacted your ability to contribute to equity, social justice, and or anti-racist practices in your current professional practice?
I don't know if I can specifically attribute the degree to that outside of me just being an educated Black man, right? Which causes a lot of people to be uncomfortable. And I've had those experiences and I've encountered people's discomfort with that, because it can be perceived as arrogant. It can be perceived as aggression. it just depends on from whose lens am I being watched. And it's just like, yeah, at the end of the day, I am who I am. I am a lot, but you get a lot. So we got to just pick and choose what that actually means to you. Again, I think what the comments I made prior to being a Black man in the space, the Black men are not doing well. Hey, Dr. Smith, what should we do? What can we do? What should we be doing? Or what are you doing? And why do they come? Again, the conversation isn't specifically around the Black men. It's around what are you doing? What role are you playing in student retention and student success? Are you engaging and connecting with students every day, regardless of your functional role at the institution? Administrative assistant, I had some of my most meaningful connections with people that probably were grossly underpaid at the institution, but they gave me a sense of you can do it. They reaffirmed and reinforced the fact that you earned your right to be here at this institution. I don't care how they make you feel, you earned your right to be here. I think about Miss Margot, who worked in a school store. And when I know she long retired, but when I walked past the school store yesterday, I was in there looking for her unconsciously, because that's just what I did every day. It was something about that friendly, familiar smile that made me feel good about being in a place that didn't really want me necessarily, or I was made to feel that by a few people, not the institution per se, but just by the peers in the space.
Well, Dr. Smith, you have had a very successful career as an entrepreneur, a higher education educator, administrator. What has been the greatest impact, though, of the EDD on your career?
The greatest impact was my ability to be the right kind of example to people. Initially, it was just to my family, right? Like, you can touch a doctor. Like, you can touch me. I'm an actual doctor. Now, it does pain me that everybody think I know everything. And I have to, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a doctor in bugs. I'm not a doctor in toenails. I have my doctorate in educational leadership and management. So your expectation is that I should be well-versed in that, but to know everything across the board, yeah, that's not it. But I think that has been the greatest impact and the most meaningful impact for me. The reality of the matter is that you can become whatever you desire to be. You've seen it happen. Like, I was the first in my family to graduate college, to get the master's degree, to get the terminal degree, all of that stuff. But I'm not the first. I mean, I'm not the last. So there's about, last I counted, on the Smith side, and I'm the second oldest, I think it's about 30 degrees. So I changed the culture and the expectation of my family of education is attainable. Education, you can have a, you can earn a degree. And I actually made it look easy. They didn't get to see me sweat, the blood, sweat, and tears. They just saw me do it with grace, and they saw me do it, and they saw me complete it. So with that being said, now, I can become a doctor too. I can get a master's degree. We have about 6 master's degrees in my family. At this point, I'm still waiting for somebody else to do a terminal degree. And they're looking at me like, I don't think that's going to happen. But we got a doctor in the family, so that's all that counts. We got one.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you've alluded to this a couple of different times, but maybe you can speak directly to it. Where do you see yourself within the next 5 years? What additional impact do you want to have?
Yeah, I've done a lot. And my mom would always say, man, it's a blessing and it's a curse, because you're a seer and you're a doer, that just make for you gonna be busy all the damn time, because just doing one thing ain't enough. I'm turning 45 on Sunday and I'm ready just to do one thing and do it well for the rest of my life. So all these 50 million things and doing funding over here and transitional homes over here and speaking gigs, which I always speak and probably always teach if given the opportunity. I just want to be a scholar practitioner. you know, I left DS. I told you guys, I shared with you that I left higher ed and started focusing on the entrepreneur thing, and I'm not satisfied. I'm not fulfilled. I foster people's success. I foster young people specifically success. My goal over the last 3 or 4 years, I've since shifted my models or adjusted my model to now foster adult success. So the people that I lead in the space, I'm able to build and cultivate new leaders. And I pride myself in knowing that everyone at the institution was fishing out of my pond. They always stole my people because they came prepped and ready, full of innovation, and excited about the work, because I hired well. I hired people who can pass the care test. You can pass the care test. I can teach you all of the other things. I can't teach you how to care about the people. I can't teach you how to care about the work. But those transferable skills, I can figure out how to move the systems around so that it's a free-flowing system and it actually makes sense. I would love to land a position in higher ed, the one that I interviewed for yesterday, just got my name all over it. And it will really position me to, one, go back and pay it forward, but then two, to do what Rita did and to do what Dr. Cross did and to do what all of these folk who, these young people that are coming will never have experienced them directly, but they can experience them and the impact of them through me. So I'm interested. It definitely will be student affairs across the board. Or the flip side is I'm an educator. I love to teach. I would love to be a faculty member. I just can't find the right place, the right space. So if you guys have any ideas over at Drexel, you'd love for me to come home. I'm totally open to teaching again and returning back to the classroom. So
it sounds like you're still going to be doing multiple things at one time.
No, Stephanie, the gang planned it. So I'm in full trans, and just to be honest, I would, that's just how I, that's my genetic makeup, but it will be multiple things in the field of education. It'll be multiple things in the field of fostering people's success. Again, the real estate stuff, I did it. I built houses and did all of this stuff, and I'm receiving text messages now. They actually made more money doing this than I did with this degree. Dr. Kent said that the degree will make money for you. I'm still waiting for all this money to come from this degree, Dr. Ken. You sent it from heaven. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. But it's the passion work at the end of the day. I know I'll be blessed. I am blessed. I don't worry about money at all. I'm more concerned about the meaningful work and the impact of the work that that's been assigned to my hand and the work that I'm actually doing. So hopefully I communicated that effectively to them yesterday, and they will see that I can meet the need.
Well, hopefully they will. We'll be sending good vibes as they go through the discernment process. And you probably already know that higher ed takes time with hiring. So
yeah, well, they actually seemed like they wanted to move yesterday. And I'm like, I would need to sell 5 houses. Like I would need some time. I can't start tomorrow. This would probably be like an August situation. Cause I really, if offered the position, that position or another position that appeals to me, I would liquidate all of my property. I would sell all of my properties and come out of that, pay off any lingering debt, pay off my car, and just do those 1, 2, 3 things without any pressure of money. And that's kind of how I'm in this space. I spent time in Thailand, which I'm all zenned up. I'm sunburned underneath this shirt. This is orange. This is not my typical color. Shoulders was itching like crazy yesterday during that interview. And I'm like, Craig, don't scratch, don't pat it. Just go through this day. But all of the sunburn was wearing me out. But I really spent some time with myself and spent some time with God and really got clarity on with this next wave. Someone told me something and it shook me to the core that I am middle-aged. Like 45 is middle age. I'm like, wait, what? Damn, actually I am middle age. And it got the wheels turning. That systems thinker, I started thinking about my own systems, how this back is not like it used to be and how this is not. Let's start this time to put some things to their proper perspective and create the life that I really desire to live. And I can see myself retiring at an institution and just being that guy, the subject matter specialist, the go-to for the students, and really in position to foster, help these young people really figure it out and recognize their full potential, while building teams and building people and building skill sets of those to expand my capacity and reach to do more and to touch more people. So that's kind of where I am. We'll see what God has. It's up to him at the end of the day. So I'll wait.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing everything, all the impact that the EDD has had on your professional practice. We do have a few lighter questions that we want to ask. If you could only choose one, what superpower would you select?
Oh, I would be able to bring people back from the dead.
Interesting.
Give life.
Yep. Love it. Love it.
That's powerful.
There's some folk I got to have some conversations with. Where's the policy? No.
I'm going to forego the question I was going to ask you and follow up on that one. So who would you bring back? Who's the one person that you would want to bring back and have that conversation with?
I probably would want to bring back my great-great-grandmother, because when she passed away, there's so much history lost because we don't know who her mother was and we don't know who. So it kind of starts and it begins in 1899 with Bessie Wilkins. So it's like, no, Gramps, you got to tell me who, what, the when, the where did everybody come from? Because I'm on. So I would go there. The first thought would be to bring my dad back. And it's just like, I work at a funeral home on the side as well. I work at a funeral home, work on a funeral home. So I handled death differently. I've always handled death differently and had a certain spiritual sensitivity to the death and the death process. So I understand we live a full life cycle. And when people, it's their time to go, how premature it may seem to us, it's clearly their time to go. Whatever purpose that they've been brought into the world to do has been satisfied, and it's not up to us to know what their purpose was. That's between that person and God. So my dad is gone. His purpose has been fulfilled. He did what he needed to do for us. So dad can stay partying in heaven, but I would definitely bring back my great-great-grandma, because there's a lot of loopholes in where we came from and that good stock. And I'm so curious to know, who were her parents. When I did the trace my DNA, the paternal side, I was able to go back to like the early 1800s, but it's the maternal side that it just stops at my great-great-grandmother. So.
Great. And last question, what has been the best live performance you have seen? So play, concert, anything?
Monique, most recent stand-up comedy. I saw her in person, and that was like the first time she came out after all the stuff with Lee Daniels. So I don't know if y'all was expecting me to say something else, but Monique killed the show. Yes, she did.
Yeah, we have no expectations on the EDD Impact Podcast. Our guests always surprise us with answers. So it has been a true pleasure to have EDD alumnus Dr. Craig Smith on Impact today. Thank you so much, Dr. Smith, for sharing.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We are always incredibly honored and excited to hear the amazing ways our EDD alums are having an impact in the world. Dr. Smith's bio will be posted with the link to this episode on our EDD program website. Thank you again.
Thank you for tuning in to Impact. We look forward to the next episode where we hear from other alums about the impact that earning a Drexel EDD has had on their professional practice, research, policy changes, and the larger society. Goodbye for now.